time for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Good to be here today. Another beautiful day in sunny Southern California.
It sure is. It sure is. I love your emails when you tell me the topic for the day, and you almost apologetically say, well, I don't have a guest, but it's going to be a great show anyway. It's always a great show when you talk here. You put so much thought and preparation into these shows here that it's a joy to listen to them. And I think that your community is blessed to have you do these things. They really are, with all the knowledge and everything you've got here. It's almost like a do-it-yourself training course here.
Well, thank you very much. I do enjoy talking about topics that I'm interested in, but I also really enjoy having guests on the show to hear about what they're doing. And we're in the process of lining up a whole nother slew of guests for our summer programs and taking us into the fall. So I have a lot of people sort of looking at their calendar, trying to pencil in the right date, but I expect...
Well, guests are good. We love guests, but I'm telling you, I love to hear your thoughts because you don't just ramble. You actually, I know you write this out and think about it and really develop a coherent program here, so I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Well, speaking of rambling, today's title is a tongue twister. And what we're going to be talking about today is if what got you here won't get you there, then what will? So, but before we get to that, let me just say that if you're not listening live, if you're listening to this on our podcast, then thanks for visiting our website, The Coaching Perspective, or visiting our podcast site, dgefeller.podbeam.com. While you're at either one of those, be sure to check out our archives. We've got years of shows that we've stored there with great guests and great topics, all of them still relevant to what's going on today in the coaching business world. So, and speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always willing to talk to coaches, CEOs, HR professionals. Just drop me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com, and we'll see what we can do about setting up a time. So, if you missed any of our previous shows, go to our website, thecoachingperspective.com, or dgefeller.podbean.com. Well, as I said at the start of the show, our title is, if what got you here won't get you there, then what will? And in case you didn't notice, the title is a wordplay on the title of a great book by Michael Goldsmith called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And I strongly recommend that you take the time to read it. But what got me started on today's topic is that I was preparing for a workshop that I'm going to be doing on June 27th for the Business Development Association of Orange County. And it's titled Goal Setting That Increases Performance. If you're interested in this, go to just put BDAOC into your Google. And the Business Development Association of Orange County will come up, look at their events, and you can see all the information on the workshop. And, hey, I'd love to see you there and know that you're one of our radio show guests. But, you know, as I started to get ready for that workshop, I was going over my notes with the usual tips and rules about setting goals. And I begin to wonder, why is it that so often we set goals, and I say we because I've got to include myself here, that we set goals and never accomplish them? It seems that telling people your goals makes it less likely that you will in fact accomplish them. The reason for this is that you get a great deal of psychological satisfaction by talking about them, and therefore less need to actually work on them. In effect, talking becomes a substitute for doing. Now, isn't that a weird twist? You know, there are different points of view on this. Most business literature tells you that you have to share your goals with your staff and you have to share them with everybody else. But most psychology literature tells you that the more you share your goals, the less likely you are to really accomplish them. Because, you know, your brain says, hey, I shared this goal that I was excited about, and somebody nodded their head or said yes, and, hey, that's as good as accomplishing it. You know, one of the tips is that if you feel compelled to share your goal, word it in a way that says, this is what my goal is, and this is how I would like you to help me. That kind of reinforces that I'm not there yet and that we have some work to do. But, you know, in fact, in Goldsmith's book, The 12 Habits of Successful People, he lists goal obsession as a bad habit. He makes the argument that many people lose sight of the here and now because they spend so much time plotting out their long-term goals, not realizing that the here and now is often the best place to take that first step to whatever you have in mind. And you know, this is a blend. We need a blend of looking at goals, which are typically longer term, at least they're not for today, and focusing on what we've got to do today. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Now, my own observations in this area, working with top executives, is that they're usually not really committed to the goals they set, that the goals frequently end up being what someone else expects of them, their staff, the board of directors, some other stakeholders, or at the very worst, it's something they're not really interested in accomplishing. You know, and too often I have seen groups set goals just because it was too hard to work on the big picture stuff. And what is the big picture stuff? Okay, it's that those nasty words, vision, mission, those kinds of things that people just kind of roll their eyes back at and go, oh, man, that has nothing to do with the real world. What are you talking about, Doug? But, you know, there's another book I want to point you to, and it is a book by Bob Shank, and it's called Life Mastery. And what he says is it's your purpose in life or business, and that makes all the difference in achieving your goals. And he gives us some great definitions that I want to share with you. And again, we're right at the start of the show. I've already given you two books. I'm not going to load you down, but I want to be real clear here that much of what I'm talking about, I have drawn from both of these people who I really respect. Bob, I personally know well and have worked with Bob, and he is someone that I would love to emulate in terms of the way he thinks creatively and communicates his ideas. And of course, Michael Goldsmith, I don't know, but I have read, I think, all of his books. And again, I always look forward to the next new book and what the information is about. Well, what Bob says is that, you know, before you start, you need to follow some basic steps. Number one, you need a purpose statement. And he says a purpose statement takes into account how we're qualified, where we're effective, and where our passion directs us for the whole of our life, all of what we are for as long as we are. And that this gives us a reason for the things we do and the lives we live. And those are Bob's words, and wow, is that a big, big statement. You know, it just sort of stops me cold right there to think. I mean, I want to give up before I start, to think that I'm going to come up with a purpose statement that's going to last my whole life, that is going to guide everything that I'm going to do. And we're going to talk about how you would do that. But he says that's really the first step, is defining that purpose statement. You know, he also talks about the fact that people who are purpose-driven, people who have clearly identified what their purpose in life is, you know, are typically easily recognized by us, that they have some things that are different than the rest of us. And, you know, as I looked at what he said, I thought, you know, those are people that I'm really impressed with. He says that purpose-driven people are selective about the areas in which they choose to get involved. They aren't against what other people are doing, but they don't get overcommitted to things that are not consistent with their purpose. purpose-driven people appear to be more energized at the end of the day than at the beginning. And I think this is because when we work on something that we are passionate about, when we work on things that are consistent with our purpose in life, it gives us energy rather than sucking the energy from us. You know, there's nothing more exhausting to me than some of the paperwork that's required to run a business that has to be done. I mean, I know it has to be done. But believe me, I can't say that I get really excited about doing it. And by the time I'm done with it, it's like, oh man, pull out the wine bottle. I am ready to take a break. He says that purpose-driven people, they look like they enjoy their success more than others, that they seem to have more lasting satisfaction in what they're accomplishing. That their achievements typically build on themselves, that they can take pleasure in what they achieve today because they can see clearly how it's building on what they want to achieve this week, what they want to achieve this month, and what they're looking to achieve this year. He said the purpose-driven people have enough time for all the things they're trying to do. Now, hold up a minute there. Have you ever met anybody that says they have enough time? You know, I can't tell you that. I would have to say that the most common thing people ask me to help them with in coaching is time management. And the most common problem with curing anybody's time management problem is that nobody wants to give up anything they're currently doing, whether what they're doing is watching television, reading a book, doing the monthly billing, checking the statements that are going out, checking the air conditioning settings in all of the offices to make sure that we're adhering to the latest green rules. We just don't like to let go of things. And purpose-driven people who've identified what is really important for me to focus on today don't work on things that aren't consistent, that aren't helping them to achieve their purpose, and therefore they have more time because so much of what we're doing. Now, you know, some things we have to do. I mean, brushing my teeth may not have anything to do with my purpose in life, but the people around me appreciate the fact that I do brush my teeth on a regular basis. So there's some maintenance things we have to do, but outside of those, there are a whole lot of things that all of us spend our time doing that aren't consistent with our purpose. And if we weren't doing them, then we would have more time. Interesting observation. Purpose-driven people don't have hundreds of acquaintances. What he's talking about here is that purpose-driven people are more selective about developing more in-depth relationships with those people that are going to help them achieve their purpose. Now, I don't mean this in a selfish way that says I'm only going to communicate with people that help me reach my goals, my purpose, because I'm just as concerned about you reaching your goals and achieving your purpose, but I'm not going to get sucked into every new idea, every new event, every new committee, every new latest petition that we want to sign and get involved in. Purpose-driven people are selective about what they're getting involved in. Purpose-driven people have a sense of anticipation and destiny that makes them exciting to be around. They are kind of on the edge, like, hey, today's the day I'm going to win the lotto. Today's the day I might win the lotto. Today's the day the big deal's going to happen. They are positive about what the world has to offer them, not fearing what the world has to offer them. So those are, you know, so when we talk about developing a purpose statement, one of the end benefits of having that purpose statement is how would you like to be described as the kind of purpose-driven person that I just went through with all of those traits. I mean, frankly, those are the kind of people I want to hang around, you know? When I talk to our producer, Paul, I mean, he loves putting on internet radio. He loves doing the shows. He does not dread coming to work. He does not dread having to do a new show. He doesn't dread editing the shows. And as a result, he seems to always be full of a lot of energy. So as part of goal setting, we really need to back up and we really need to identify, what is my purpose here in life? Once we've done that, then we need to look at, what is my vision for the future? This is the snapshot. This is the picture of what life is going to be like when I have achieved my purpose. Now, probably never going to achieve my purpose. I'm never going to achieve this picture, but it's sort of like those things, those pictures that we put up on the wall and we think, someday I'm going to have that car, or I'm going to have that house at the beach, or I'm going to have that house in the mountains. And you know, the odds of getting those things, just because we've got a picture in front of us that clearly shows what we want, are much greater than the odds of getting those things if we didn't have those pictures. All kinds of scientific evidence about those kinds of visual reinforcements that sort of sit in our brain and allow us, while not even consciously thinking about those pictures, allow us to sort through the things that get presented to us during the day and selectively work on those that are going to help us achieve that picture. So that vision, that picture of the future, that is what the future is going to look like if we achieve our purpose, is what we need to have here. Now, understand that the issue here is balance. I mean, we don't want to fall into the trap that Goldsmith talked about focusing too much on the future and not taking care of the here and now. So there is some balance there, but you still need that picture. Okay, the dreaded M word, mission statement. Well, how many hours have people struggled with creating mission statements that did nothing for them? You know, that ended up just being wordsmithing exercises that, okay, we can check off the box. We've got that. Put it on the back of the business card. Put it in the lobby, in the office, whatever. You know, a mission statement is supposed to motivate you to do even the most mundane aspects of your life. Because the mission statement is the action statement of your purpose. It is taking your purpose statement and redefining it into, what actions are you going to take to achieve this purpose? That's what the mission statement is all about. So don't zone out on me just because I said mission statement. Sure, it's not easy. So what? Frankly, I don't find any of this really easy. I find it extremely difficult. The next item is having a clear strategy that sharpens our thinking as we constantly reassess the resources at hand and the opportunities that are available to us. This allows us to selectively manage how we're spending our time and how we're allocating those resources. Now, I want to tell you that I very seldom see a strategy done. I see people jumping from mission or vision into goal setting. I don't see them defining their purpose, that big picture statement that isn't really going to change. And I don't see them coming up with a clear strategy that says, this is my strategy for achieving my purpose. And out of that strategy, I'm then going to develop goals, which are like tasks or mini action items that are consistent with my strategy. If you think of it as if we were at war, you know, the strategy is how we're going to win this war, and the goals are the actions we're going to have to take to win the war. You know, I just recently read a statement about, well, this was about an appointment at the national level, and the president had submitted the name of this person to Congress, and it was going to be a sort of a slam dunk appointment. It turned out that this process took 9 months. Now, I can't remember the title. This was the person that was in charge of health, education, and welfare. That's what it was. And it was just recently. Now, you know, 9 months. 9 months was really frustrating. Here was an individual who had a active practice, was making money, working every day, had a full schedule just like the rest of us. President calls him, says, I want to appoint you to be the national advisor for health, education, and welfare. And all we have to do is pull together your resume and send it off to Congress, and they're going to approve it. Great. And what this guy does is he really has to stop his business, figure out who's going to handle his clients, figure out how he's going to wind things down, figure out how he's not going to have any financial involvement in those things that could look like a conflict of interest, so that when his appointment is approved next week, that he's ready to go to work. Wow. And then it takes 9 months. What does he do for 9 months? You know, he said that the first weeks were the most frustrating he ever spent. He would go to his office and he would sit there. He had no clients. He had no telephone calls. He had nothing to do. What was he going to do? He's just sitting here waiting with no idea whether this appointment is going to come through tomorrow, next week, next month, or whether it's going to ultimately take the 9 months that it really did. He got to work and he developed a strategy. He sat down. He had the time to develop a strategy for what he wanted to accomplish if he was appointed to this position in charge of health, education, and welfare. As a result, he was more effective when he was finally appointed in that position than anybody else that has held that position, because he had the luxury, as he put it after the fact, I had the luxury of creating a strategy so that when things started, I knew what the direction was that we were going in. Once you have that strategy, you've got the purpose statement, the vision, the mission statement, and the strategy. Now you're ready to start creating goals. And I love the way Bob Shank put this. He says, goals that harmonize rather than clash with one another are the objective now that we've done all of these other things. Goals that harmonize. You know, I can't tell you how many business meetings I've been in that walked away with lists of goals that in no way did they harmonize with one another. The objective was everybody picked the goals that were important to them, and nobody was looking to see, did these things harmonize not only with one another, but did they harmonize with the strategy that had been laid out here? Were they the best areas to allow us to achieve our purpose? And what we're advocating is goal setting, but what we're advocating is, before you worry about setting your goals, define your purpose statement, define your vision of the future, define your mission statement that motivates you, that is the action statement of your purpose, define your strategy for achieving that purpose, and then come up with goals. And note that I said that setting goals is the last step on this list. So let's go back for a minute to purpose, you know. And again, I want to reference my friend Bob Shank says that most of the time when he asks people what their purpose in life is, they give them a list of goals. They don't really understand purpose. You know, I find that when I ask people that question, they just give me a blank stare like I was talking another language. What do you mean, my purpose? You know, and in some ways, don't we all envy the person who grew up knowing without a doubt what their purpose was in life? You know, it may have been making others healthy. They thought they wanted to be a doctor or a nurse. Or it may have been, I want to teach. Or it may have been, I want to be an advocate for some group by being a lawyer or a spokesperson or whatever. It may have been a passion for some reform, like children's rights or women's rights or whatever. You know, I just really envy those people who sort of came out of the womb with, this is my purpose statement, and that's the direction I'm going in for the rest of my life. The rest of us have to struggle with this thing. But the struggle is worth it. You know, Abraham Maslow, who did the research on hierarchy of needs, his research concluded that both the quality and the quantity of life were affected by a person's intensity of purpose. He said, in fact, the length of one's life is directly linked to his or her sense of purpose that is felt at midlife. In Maslow's observations, if you didn't possess a reason big enough to define your life, you wouldn't live as long as someone who did. Now, hey, I could give you a whole lot of reasons why you should be listening to this and why you should take some action after we're done talking today, but how about living longer? That's a pretty basic one. I mean, research right here says that if I live a purpose-driven life, if I have identified my purpose and I'm pursuing that purpose, that I will have a better quality and a longer quantity of life. But what if you don't know what your purpose is, and how do you figure it out? How do you create a purpose statement? Well, you know, the backwards way of doing this is most people derive their purpose from their activities rather than deriving their activities from their purpose. It sort of says you are because of what you do. You know, this defines the frustration of people who have worked for a company, lose their job, and then have no self-confidence because their whole image of who they are, of what they are about, was tied up with what they did for who. I was the chief of XYZ for this company, and I no longer am. I am now a nothing. Nobody wants to talk to me. I have no value. You know, if you have defined your purpose, then the activities follow the purpose, and activities can change over time, and it's a whole different way of looking at it. So the tough work here, in my mind, is writing that purpose statement. You know, there's some questions that Bob Shank has outlined in his book, Life Mastery, that help you sort of create an outline of what that purpose might be. And he suggests that you look at these questions and you write down the sentences or words that kind of respond to it. And he says, you inventory these things. What are the unique gifts or abilities that you have? Now, we're going to use the word unique in every one of these statements. Now, when I say unique, I don't mean that I have some ability that nobody else in the world has. I mean that I have an ability that not everybody has. So, you know, my unique ability might be I am really good with numbers. Now, there's lots of people that are good with numbers, but we all know there's lots of people that aren't good with numbers. My unique ability might be that I am good in communicating with people. Lots of people good at that. Lots of people aren't good at that. So unique means not the only one in the world, but it means unique in that they are strengths that you possess. They're talents that you have. They're gifts, or maybe they're even abilities that you have developed. So what are those things? Next, you want to identify your unique personal passion. Something that moves your heart, demands your energy, that you would do anything to make it happen. Now, that one is going to take a few minutes to probably think about. Those of us who are reacting to life and doing whatever has been presented to us and not taking time to think about what we want out of life, what we think our objective is in life, our purpose, and what we're passionate about, This is a tough question. What is your personal passion? Your personal passion might be, I am really passionate about helping the poor. I am really passionate about teaching people. I am really passionate about helping children. I am really passionate about, you know, seeing that people have a safe place to live. I'm passionate about housing. I'm passionate about clean water. You know, the people that really have this down pat are those who are working for nonprofits. I have never met somebody who was running a nonprofit that wasn't passionate about the cause of that nonprofit. And yet I have met many people who are running for-profit businesses that have no passion about the business that they are in. It's unfortunate that the passionate nonprofits don't have some of the business knowledge and skills that the for-profit leaders have, and that the for-profit leaders don't have some of the passion that the nonprofit leaders have. But what is it that you're passionate about? What is it that you get excited about? What is it that you're willing to argue about? What is it that when you work on it, you're totally energized? What is your unique personality traits? You know, are you an extrovert? Are you an introvert? Are you really calm under pressure? I mean, do you handle crisis as well? Maybe you should be working in the ER. You know, what is it about your personality? And again, we're sort of inventorying here who we are, how we are different from everybody else. Because when you add all these things up, there's probably nobody or very few that have all of these things. Any one of these unique things, many other people will have. But your basketful is going to be truly unique. I love this one. What are your unique responsibilities? You know, Bob has hit it on the head here in that we're not dealing with theory here. We're not saying I'm going to come up with a purpose statement that requires me to go to third world countries and work on this thing that I'm passionate about, while at the same time I have elderly parents that need to be taken care of at home. I have responsibilities. What are those unique responsibilities that I need to factor into this purpose statement? Might be parents, it might be children, who knows what they are. What are your unique experiences in education? You know, this is sort of, okay, what are the life lessons that you've learned? What are the things through schooling, through experience, that you've learned that are sort of unique? And you know, it always amazes me that I have trouble with this question until I go to teach somebody something. And then it's like, they go, how did you know to do that? And I go, well, doesn't everybody know how to do that? No, that's just genius, Doug. I go, well, that's not genius. It's anybody that's been working with computers would know to do that. But, you know, so there's things that we have to dig for here, things that we have unique experiences in education in that we don't think of as unique, that we think of because we've been living with them for a period of time. You want to look at your unique network. You know, again, very few of us can accomplish anything in a vacuum. We do it through and with other people. So we're looking at that network of who do I already know? What circles do I already move in? Gee, I'm really solid in the academic circles and respected there. My name's known. And if I've got a purpose in life that relates to academic circles, that would seem to make a lot of sense. But if my purpose in life relates to for-profit businesses, I may have more of an uphill battle. I need to really look at that. And then what are your unique resources? You know, I recently was exposed to somebody that is very involved in helping nonprofits start up. And one of the reasons that they are doing this, and this is a conclusion I'm drawing without having ever personally met this person other than communicate, is that their unique resource is that they inherited a certain amount of money that gives them the ability to do things that maybe I couldn't do, even if we both had the same passion for helping nonprofits. They have a unique resource there. I have a unique resource in that I'm at a stage in life where my children have grown up and they have children and they've left the home. And, you know, I don't have that time-consuming parental responsibility that somebody with a young family has. So I have unique resources in terms of time there. And the last is, what are your unique allegiances or allegiance? You know, what is it? It might be very patriotic. It might be my beliefs and my religious beliefs. But what are your unique allegiances that really need to play into this purpose statement? Well, okay, we've kind of talked about how to develop the purpose statement. We've talked about why you need to develop that. All of this is a prelude to setting goals. And when I started out, I thought we would be spending all this time talking about goal setting. And as I got into preparing for today's show, I realized that much of what I could tell you about goal setting, you've probably heard. I do want to share some of it with you. But the rest of this information that we've covered up to this point, I think, you know, taking what Goldsmith has laid out and taking what Shank has laid out, I think they bring a unique perspective to this issue of identifying or of pre-work that needs to be done before you start working on your goals. You know, there's a statement that was attributed to Henry David Thoreau, American author and philosopher. He said, "What you get by achieving your goals is not as important as what you become by achieving your goals." I like that. The goal is strictly a task that is going to support our strategy, that supports our mission statement, that supports our vision of where we want to end up, which is consistent with what we see as our purpose in life or business. So the goal isn't the end-all be-all, but the goal is the end action item. It's where, you know, as they say, the rubber meets the road. There's a couple of tips I want to just give you about setting goals. One, set clear goals. You know, it is really amazing how often I see business goals, sometimes even personal goals, that aren't real clear. They need to be written down. They need to be easy to understand. You need to be able to pick it up next month and understand what you meant, not your shorthand for today. You need to set challenging goals. Goals are only effective if they're a stretch to achieve them. What they have found is that the more difficult the goal is, the more likely it is that people will achieve that goal. That easy goals, people are not challenged to work on. We're looking at securing commitment. There's people around you, your family, your business associates, that these goals require that, you know, you need their commitment, not necessarily to the goals, but you need their commitment to you, that they're going to support you spending the time and effort and the resources on working on these goals. You need to get some feedback on your goals. Now, this is a tough one. I don't want you to run out and share your goal with everybody, because then you feel like you've accomplished it and we know what happens then. So in terms of feedback, what you're looking for is help on how to accomplish the goal. You don't want to just say, you know, hey, let me tell you about the three goals that I've set for myself for this week or this month. And aren't I a genius here for setting these three goals? No. What you want to do is go, I've set these goals. I'm going to do these four things to achieve these goals. Do you see anything that I'm missing? Could you make some suggestions? Could you give me some feedback as to maybe some shortcuts or some things that I should be cautious about in working on those goals? You got to make sure that the goals don't become too complex. You know, I've made the mistake in the past in working with companies on strategic planning of documenting everything that was said in terms of a goal in a two-day seminar, and afterwards presenting them with a well-documented list of 50 or 75 goals that were identified in the meeting. Too complex. You know, what takes a lot of time but is well worth it is going through those 50 or 75 goals and saying, what categories do they fall into? Maybe 10 things. Which ones are really a priority? Which ones are the ones that we really need to spend our time on? You know, we need to make sure that when we're setting goals that we keep them few in number. Productivity studies show that you can't really focus on more than 5 to 7 items at one time. Okay? I don't care if you're a woman. We all know women can multitask better than men. But still, this is not a gender bias study, 5 to 7 items at any one time. Maybe it is gender bias. Maybe that's the average. Men 2, women 8, whatever. So you want to make sure that you have got your goals down. I was having lunch with a client today, and we were talking about goal setting and tasks. And he said, oh, yeah, I document it. I says, really? How do you do that? And he reached over, and he had his briefcase with him, and he reached in, and he very proudly pulled out his sheet of paper, and he held up a sheet of paper. It was actually single-spaced, 2 sheets of paper, might have been more than 2, but at least 2 sheets of paper, had to be 50, 70 goals. He said, I go through these things all the time. And I thought, you know, there's no way I can even keep in my head 50 or 70 things that need to be done. What are the 7 things on that list that I should be working on today or this week? So keep the number few. Make sure that you have set SMART goals. Now, if you haven't heard the term SMART goals, the S-M-A-R-T is an acronym that stands for. The S is for specific. Your goal must identify exactly what you want to accomplish as specifically as you can. I want to accomplish this. I don't want to just make more money. I want to make $95.92 more per week, whatever it is. You need to be as specific as you possibly can be. The M stands for measurable. If you can't measure whether or not you've achieved the goal, it isn't explained clearly. Every goal is one that there should be no doubt when it is achieved. It should be truly measurable. I have finished it, I've completed it, I've reached the number, some way to measure it. It needs to be realistic. Okay, we talked about stretch. You want a stretch goal. You don't want it too easy, but you don't want to make it impossible. I do not want to set a goal that says I am going to dunk a basketball. I am not tall enough to dunk a basketball, no matter how much I want to do it. So let's get realistic about it, okay? And we need to set goals. The T stands for time-bound, which means that every goal has a due date associated with it. And I like to go a step further. I don't want just a due date. I want progress dates. So if the goal is that by the end of the year, we're going to be at a run rate of 100,000 widgets a year, a month, I want to know that you know, by next month, we're going to be at a run rate of 50, and the month after, we're going to be a run rate of 70,000, and, you know, that we're making progress. We aren't going to just do it. Obviously, you need to write down your goals, and you need to review them frequently. You know, one of the things that we did in the executive forums that I used to run is that we would identify the 3 to 6 main goals for the year. We would print them up very succinctly on a little piece of paper the size of a business card and laminate it. And you would carry that around with you in your wallet so that every time you went to reach for a credit card, that little laminated goal statement popped up and you looked at it again. And it kind of reminded you, oh, I was going to do that. You know what? I could do that while I'm here. So And you want to be careful. We've talked about this before. You want to share them selectively. You know, you don't want to get the full psychological value of achieving the goal by talking about it. Well, all right. So let me apologize to Michael Goldsmith. I really like his book. What Got You Here Won't Get You There is a great title. But I couldn't resist the if what got you here won't get you there, then what will? And my answer to that is what will is setting reasonable goals, setting good goals. And the only way to set good goals is to go through this process of identifying your purpose statement, your vision statement, your mission statement, your strategy, and then goals that harmonize with those. Hey, this has been a enjoyable topic. I appreciate you giving me time to talk to you about this. I know from clients that I've had this discussion with that if you take this information and you apply even 50% of it, you're going to be much better off and your time's going to have been well spent. So this is Doug Gefeller saying thank you very much for listening to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show. It's a pleasure talking to you. I hope that we have given you information today that you can take and use immediately to make your business and your life more successful and more enjoyable.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.